The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao.
Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest, bestest, and pretty much only Doom Patrol-related podcast.
G'day, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. And we have a Gmail account for the show, which is waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we're on Facebook sometimes. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com. And we are part of the Inner Circle Comics thing, which is, I think it's a historical reenactment militia. Is that right?
No. Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find our bestest friend there, Wilfred, who is the Sentient Show Twitter account. And this week, we are joined by a very special guest, someone who is a noted, well-respected, and enthusiastic voice within the comics community. He's a writer with the website Comic Book Resources, apparently writing some 2,600 articles, I discovered. he's also the author of the Hawkman Companion book, which is fantastic. He also runs the Doom Patrol related blog titled My Greatest Adventure 80.blogspot.com. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mr. Doug Zavisha.
Hi, everybody.
Woo-hoo. Woo-hoo.
So happy to be here in Australia.
Yeah.
How are you finding it?
I haven't.
So, Paul, what are we going to be talking about this week on the show with Doc?
We're going to be talking about classic Doom Patrol with a dash of Challenges of the Unknown.
Ooh.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
And they're not wearing purple. I'm just going to spoil that one right now.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, fantastic. So, Doug, how's your week in comics been?
Well, it was the all-new, all-different Marvel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we got some not so different, but still new, or at least new number ones. Doctor Strange. That was the best read of the week that I found.
Okay.
Of course, I do still have stuff from my pile that I haven't gotten to, because as you mentioned, doing reviews for CBR, you know, we got to get the reviews out. So I'll buy my stack, I'll do my reviews, and everything else just kind of sits and piles up. I get a day off.
How long have you been reviewing for them?
Since 2008. My first review with them was the Abnett and Lanning Guardians of the Galaxy number one.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a long time. You must really enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Although I'll admit at this point, I'm kind of running out of ways to say it's good, it's great, it's awesome, it sucks, you know?
Right. Wow. Oh, well, yeah, I was doing a bit of research, and I found on CBR, when you look up your name, Doug, there are 2,600 different articles attributed to yourself. So
Most of them are reviews, but some are like they'll boost reviews to the front page, so it winds up duplicating an article.
Okay.
And then there's also some con coverage in there.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I've obviously been reading your stuff for years without even knowing who you were, and I think only last week I probably read a review of yours without looking at the byline.
Well, thank you.
Well, that's amazing.
Just click on it twice, though, okay? That way it looks good.
Hear that, everyone? Twice. Click twice.
Every Doug review, click twice. And if you want to click on some of the ads, go for it, too. That'll make it even look even better to the boss.
Right. Paul, how's your week in comics and such been?
Oh, I can. I don't think I've read much. I did a little bit of eBaying and picked up some old issues that I used to own that I sold at some point. So I when my daughter was around the time she was on the way, I actually sold a lot of comics because we were poor. And as is my habit, I occasionally go, why did I get rid of those? And I try and reassemble sets. So I've been getting some 80s Manhunter back together and Power of the Atom.
Wow.
Which is, I'm probably the only person in the world actively seeking them right now.
Right.
You might be. The 80s Manhunter, I remember being pretty good, though.
Don Ostrander, yeah. And it had ties to Suicide Squad, which is probably why I'm interested in it right now.
And the artist on the early part, I want to say Doug Rice?
Possibly. Possibly.
Yeah, good stuff.
Stuff. Some guy.
Right. A guy who does pencils and such. Yeah.
What about you, Mike? What's up?
I had a decent size haul this week too with comics, and yeah, like Doug, I've not gotten to everything in there. I've still got things waiting to be read, but yeah, there was some good stuff. Like, I really enjoyed Batman Robin Eternal kicking off this week. Paper Girls was really good. Space Riders finished up, which is just this Mondo Bizarro sci-fi kick-ass saga. That's just, it's insane, but I really enjoyed it. So it was a good week. You know, it was, I avoided a lot of the Marvel stuff purely because over here the conversion wasn't too kind on the wallet.
They are pricey issues at this point.
Yeah. I think things like Amazing Spider-Man number one, even though they're larger size issues, they were still close to $10 over here.
Oh.
So, yeah. So I thought about it. And I thought, nah, I might wait and see. Maybe trade weight.
But trade knows? Weight. Become one, Mike. You can do it. Become one of us. One of us.
You would think I could, but no, I cannot. Especially when I realize that I don't have one of the issues that we're talking about tonight. And I was like, okay, I have to get that one because it's the Challenges of the Unknown issue that I don't have. And it isn't reprinted in any of the Showcase Presents volumes for the Doom Patrol.
So. No, but it is in the archive edition.
Ah. Mm.
So do I go for lucky enough to own those?
Yeah. Yeah. So I either hunt down the archive editions or I find the single issue somewhere. So who knows? Who knows? But yeah, I don't know if I can do what you do, Paul, and trade weight for everything.
Tell you what, the first 6 months is the hard bit when you decide to trade weight and then you've got nothing to read for 6 months.
Wow.
That's the hard bit. But after that, it's sweet. And, you know, all that frustration that people have with, oh, Sandman Overture took forever to come out. I'm going to get a book in about a month's time and I'm just going to read it in one go. So,
right.
And yes. It's going to cost me less than it did for you.
Uh-huh.
And it won't have ads. It'll sit on my shelf.
Right.
And I can lend it to people.
Oh, look, I think that's a clock over there. Does anyone else hear ticking?
I sure do.
Thank you, Doug. Yes, it's the Doom clock. So looking at the Doom clock, the last issue we had of a Doom Patrol series was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run, which was cover dated July 2011 and went on sale May 4th of that same year. So it's been 4 years and 23 weeks since our last Doom Patrol book. How does that make you feel, gents?
That's way too long. That's forever.
Yeah.
It's an eternity.
Four years.
Too long. The last appearance of the team, however, was only 9 weeks ago in two different comics. All-Star Section 8, number 3, where we had the cameo of the team in the background with a huge meeting of all the Justice League-type heroes. And in Justice League United, number 12, we had a one-panel appearance of the team as Stargirl was talking to Robot Man about getting him to sign on for the JLU's next mission. And a reminder to everyone that JLU 14 comes out this week.
What? Okay, wait, I'll get my pen. I'm going to write that down.
Get your pen. It should actually be out by the time this episode airs.
What?
Yes.
How does that work?
Through the magic.
Time travel.
Yeah, time travel and comic book science come to life. Yes. So we encourage everyone to go out there and pick up JLU 14, because who knows, we might get a glimpse of the Hall Patrol. We get everyone using that fun hashtag all over again. You never know. Did Jeff Parker respond to your tweet today, Paul, by any chance?
Jeff Parker favorited the tweet.
Right.
So I said, are there any messages for fans of the Doom Patrol? And he favorited it. So that's that's better than ignoring it,
that's
blocking me. So I take that as a positive sign.
Right. So slightly cryptic. Yes. Okay. And this week in Doom Patrol history, Brace yourselves, gentlemen.
I've been waiting for this all day since you said it was awesome.
I didn't say it was awesome. Oh. I never said that. Wilfred said it would be a quote-unquote doozy. Uh-huh. This week in Doom Patrol history, there were no Doom Patrol comics on sale.
What?
None at all.
It's like our reality.
In all of the team's 52-year history, not a single issue ever went on sale between October 11th and 17th.
Wow.
So, I was so close, and then I realized, no, it doesn't fall within the week parameters. So, there you go.
Where are you getting these details from, Mike?
I'm getting these details from Mike's Amazing World of Comics.
Wow, that's where we get all our details for the show. And
most of them.
Yeah, we don't thank Mike enough.
No.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, other Mike. So yeah, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
This week on Doomsplaining, we're looking at the Doom Patrol issue 101 from Volume 1, which came out in, well, it's cover dated February 1966, but it actually came out on the 2nd of December 1965, and it cost 12 cents. That's a good price for a comic.
Yes.
And there were 32 wonderful pages, all edited by Murray Boltonoff. And the next comic we're going to do after that is, crazy, we're going to go to Challenges of the Unknown, number 48, which also came out on the same date. Isn't that? And it also cost 12 cents, and it was 32 pages, also edited by Murray Boltonoff. Could there be a connecting thread between the two? And finally, we will look at Doom Patrol number 102, which came out in January 20, 1966, but it was cover dated March 1966. 12 cents, Murray Boltonoff again. What are the odds? It's insane. So, but we'll start by looking at number 101. So, this issue opens with a splash of the action to come as the hulking robot Cranus, he's a self-declared robot emperor, he blasts Cliff Steel, who's Robot Man, with his I-beams, while Elastigirl, Rita Farr, and Negative Man, Larry Trainer, dangle from each of his fists. And there's an ineffective crocodile form of Beast Boy, who's also known as Gar or Craig at this point, and he's pinned beneath a giant steel foot. So, and the chapter title reads, I, Cranus, Robot Emperor. I personally would never call my child Cranus because it rhymes with anus, but and they'd get teased at school. But anyway.
Wow, I hadn't even thought of that, but good work, Paul.
Thank you. That's how I roll. Anyway, the story opens with Nicholas Daltrey, who is a scumbag-looking man, and he is the guardian of Gar, or Craig, as he's known at this time, and he's visiting the stock exchange to be informed of his poor investment choices that have left him in debt to the tune of $25,000, which is a lot back then. When he gets back home, he ponders his dilemma, thinking how he's already embezzled $100,000 from the boy's trust account. And Gar chooses this inopportune moment to request to see the financials for his fund, but is told to get out of here. Exasperated by his debt and Gar's nosiness, Daltrey makes a call to Mr. Z, who nothing sus about that person, who can make problems disappear. Anyway, despite Gar's green hue, Daltrey's unaware of his morphing ability into different beasts, and Gar assumes the shape of a greyhound and uses that shape to follow Daltrey in his car the next morning. And then Gar purchases in a tree outside the window where Daltrey and Mr. Z very clumsily negotiate his murder with code words like pencil instead of saying gun. But because these are fully explained in their conversation, it renders them completely unnecessary at this point.
Right.
So Gar then rushes over to the Doom Patrol to seek their help in preventing his upcoming murder. And naturally, Cliff is ready to help. Actually, Cliff is a total dick and accuses him of lying to join the team, and then it attempts to assault him, leading to some interesting visual action for someone to draw. In this case, it's Bruno Premiani. Mm-hmm. And and then throughout that conversation. And the rest of the team are a bit more understanding than Cliff, but the chief wants them to investigate some space signals from an island, so he interrupts their fight. And he reassures Gar that they will be back by 8 o'clock tonight in time for his murder.
Punctuality is important, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, we cut to the island where their plane has landed, and the team immediately lose another aircraft to a missile. This happens a lot to them, we've found. And they find themselves trapped under a force field dome. And then Gar, as a monkey, he swings off into the jungle and soon leads the team to a giant, regal-looking robot dude. Larry says maybe Cliff knows him because they're both robots, and then Cliff tries to punch Larry for calling him a robot. And then Rita shushes them as the giant automaton speaks, and it says, "I am Kranos, Emperor of Robots, and you are my prisoners." Uh-oh. End of part one. So what do we think of this, guys?
It's a bit all over the place, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I can't get over how horrible everyone is to Gar.
Kind of deserves it. He's Gar.
Do you not remember what he did to their headquarters?
Well, yeah, but I mean, if he wanted to join the team, he would just say, "I want to join the team." I mean, this is a very elaborate story to make the team trust him. Anyway, and you know, the fact that we know Daltrey is a scumbag. I mean, like, he would be, you know, he's a child abuser, basically. You know, he's, you know, he's. It's lucky it's not worse than it is.
True.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So,
did he remind you guys at all of Craig Ferguson?
He does. He's got the eyebrows.
Oh, how dare you! Actually, yeah.
Good luck unseeing that now, people.
Wow, that's. I'll never look at Craig Ferguson the same way ever again. Wow.
That's, oh dear.
God.
Shall we move on to part two?
Let's.
Okay, so all this is written by Arnold Drake, by the way, who he writes all the three comics we look at tonight. Anyway, in part two, it's called What Makes Kranos Run? And basically the team are fighting him, so there's lots of back and forwards in this fight, and the team are getting trapped. Larry ends up trapped in Negative Man form in an electricity field, and Kranos seems to have a bit of knowledge of the team, like he's got some insider scoops. And eventually they decide the best thing to do is to pull him apart. So he's got this flying wand thing that keeps attacking them, and Cliff pulls off an arm and chucks it up there to bring it down, and that frees Larry. Beast Boy turns into an elephant and smashes into him, and then turns into a giant pterodactyl and starts pulling arms off. And they bring him down to little bits and pieces. He's still talking. He's quite happy talking. And eventually his head's on the ground, and Larry in Negative Man form spins around and starts heating it up till the top pops off. And they see that inside it's actually a villain they already know. It's the Brain.
Oh, no.
And as the robot pieces are sort of flopping around, the torso starts to fly, scoops up the brain out of the skull, and then zooms off and says au revoir.
And it's just this weird metallic torso literally flying through the air.
So quite an interesting fight. But they've got to get back to Midway City in time for Gar's murder. So they all hide across the road, which isn't very subtle. They see this character that Gar knows is Mr. Z, and he arrives at the house and then climbs up onto the roof and through one of the windows into Gar's room, where he sees a message that's been left in phosphorescent paint on the mirror in the dark. And this has been left by Daltrey, and it says, "Do not shoot, you're being watched." So then he climbs out the window and leaves, and naturally, the team are very concerned that someone went into Gar's window. No, actually, they just accuse him of wasting their time. It's nothing sus about a man climbing into Gar's window and out again.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So,
it's a good climb, too.
It is a good climb. He's quite agile. Back at the Doom Patrol headquarters, they don't care about Gar, it seems. Anyway, before we can dwell on this terrible form of support, we see a plane with men draped all over it. Is there a woman there? It's hard to tell.
No.
Anyway. No. Anyway, they're draped all over. They look like they've been at a rave all night. but one of them is in the plane and he's calling the Doom Patrol for help. The challengers of the unknown need help. Mm-hmm. And that is the end of the issue.
Wow.
Wow. Now, there is a backup. I don't want to dwell on the backup because I don't particularly like it much.
Fair enough.
Yeah, this is what actually happened. You know, we got the Doom Patrol's origin in their first appearance, My Greatest Adventure number 80. Mm-hmm. Is that familiar to you, Doug?
Kinda. Yeah.
Anyway, there was like a couple of panels about Cliff. He got an operation. His brain was put into a robot body. This is sort of it's a decompressed version of that story. So after he had the operation, he went a bit crazy and ran around town trying to trash things, and people tried to use a tactical nuclear missile to stop him, which seems appropriate for a robot man in an urban area. But in this chapter, we see that he's about to electrify a whole stadium full of people and commit suicide at the same time. And the chief shows up and sprays him with some stuff that stops that, and then he runs off. He steals some clothes, chucks a piano at some cops, lots of interesting things like that. And then he hooks up with some strange people, like a blind man, a very ugly woman, a midget, and a hunchback. For no reason. Anyway, and meanwhile, the chief is revealed to be the man who did the operation, which we already knew because we'd read the comic back in the day. Mm-hmm. And he wants to get nutrients to Cliff, because Cliff will die if he doesn't feed his brain in the robot body. Cliff outwits him using these four strangers that he's met. And so they're still, Cliff is with a team of misfits, but it's not the right one.
Not yet.
Not yet. So that's the backup. So what do we think of the second half of this comic? It was a thing that we read.
I latched on to Robot Man's last word balloon. I was going to say last line, but it's not the last line. Forget it, chicken. The kid's a teen fink. And he's referring to the last girl as chicken.
Yeah.
Man, why is he still together? Different times.
Yeah. Cliff would not be a counselor for youth, would he?
No.
I've got to say, I was a bit disappointed with the issue in that the challenges kind of don't appear till the very last page. And the story involving Gar just seems very, hey, Gar's in trouble. Do we really care? We'll try and help him out. But it seemed like all over the place. Yeah. And then we get to the actually interesting part of the story, which is, a crossover back in the 60s, which, wasn't quite as common as it is these days. So
I did a little digging, and this might actually be the first true crossover.
I was wondering that.
Wow.
At least what I could find, because, Marvel was doing whatever they were doing, but they weren't truly having crossovers. And then Zatanna's search through all the different DC titles in 65 to 66 was happening as well. But I think this direct crossover, one title to the next, might have been the first.
Wow.
Or at least we're going to call it the first, right?
Let's. Let's make it's that official. Bold claim and run with it.
Cool. Do you want to take us through the Challenges of the Unknown number 48 then, Doug?
Will do. All right, so Challenges of the Unknown 48, Twilight of the Challengers. This might be the best single opening page of a crossover ever. Written by Arnold Drake and drawn by Bob Brown. The Doom Patrol answer the Challenger's call, fly to the Challenger's, in this case, cave, which I'd have to double check and make sure. Well, actually, it says right up top, Challenger's Mountain. But they keep referring to it in story as a cave rather than the mountain. So,
Okay.
It's one of those cave-mountain combos.
Yeah. Well, all mountains have caves, right?
Sure.
We'll go with that. At least for action figure playsets, that never happened.
Oh, if only.
Yeah. But the dialogue between these folks coming in, it's just so fun, especially the way Cliff's word balloon falls apart. Oh, and it gets all icicly. And here's the best part. Negative Man calling Cliff a schmobot. Shout out to one of your listeners there, right?
Schmoby.
Yeah. So anyway, responding to the distress call, the Doom Patrol with Chief arrive at Challenger's Mountain because they were very specific to bring Chief, where they find the Challengers passed out, victims of a mysterious malady. Now here's the fun part. They were all called to Challenger's Mountain, but they take Challengers back to the Doom Patrol headquarters because, that's where all Chief's
toys. Look at those labs.
Yeah. So back at Doom Patrol HQ, Calder uses a life cabinet, which just looks like a big freezing chamber, but, you know, complete with icicles on everybody. And it's not a liquor cabinet because, you know, after all, this is not a crossover with Beyond Belief. And this show, this slows down the Challenger's fading conditions.
Right.
And then Chief loosens up his tie because he's going to get really Bob Haney crazy on this one. And he uses radio energy to communicate directly to the Challenger's brain centers.
Wow.
Come on.
That's some comic book science right there.
That is beyond comic book science. That is Bob Haney right there, except it's not. And throughout this issue, I just kept having to check the credits to make sure it wasn't Haney. So you get a rundown of the Challenger haters, including Cray, not to be confused with Cranus, who we just saw in the last issue prior to this, Volcano Man, Drabney, and Multi-Man. You might remember Multi-Man, folks, from the Justice League International days.
Yeah.
Here he's more like a little, guys remember Gazoo from Flintstones?
Yes.
Yes, he's like a gazoo that can change into animals, basically. So then the next page over, Rocky is attacked by a rabbit that he's carrying. Not only that, but the rabbit latches on and starts turning his arm blue.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Second Bob Haney check. Five pages in, two Bob Haney checks. So the bunny rabbit puts Mike's ponies to shame. And it turns out that it's actually a chemozoid or zooid or however you would pronounce Z-O-O-I-D. So we're going to go with zooid, which sounded better in my head and is having a real hard time coming out of my mouth.
Right.
But essentially, I'd like to sum it up as rabbits that hump the life out of their victims.
Oh, my God.
Like it's doing at the bottom of page five. So anyway, Rocky's dealing with that. Multi-Man's kind of taunting him, hey, I can take care of your friend, but you got to let us all out. So, of course, what do the Challengers do? They let out the Challenger haters so that Rocky can be helped. And Multi-Man helps Rocky with Challengers, Challengers, Bo Ballingers, Banana, Banna, Fo Fallingers, Fee Fi Mo Malingers, Challengers. And no, I'm not kidding.
Wow.
Yeah, another Bob Haney check. Still not Bob Haney.
This is Arnold Drake that wrote this, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Wow. Jeez.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
So then you get a scrum between the Challenger haters and the Challengers, but Multi-Man unleashes some more chemozoids. Come on. You got to insert a sound effect or something for that, right?
Like okay. Sure.
That takes the Challengers down, and it's taking all of them down. They're all turning blue. But they found the magic solvent that Multi-Man used. They're able to reverse the effects. And so we cut to the Challenger haters getting ready to take over the world or whatever it is they're going to do. But the Challengers, in the meanwhile, have faked their own deaths. Because, you know, who's not going to die by chemozoids? Why'd you guys do this to me?
Yeah, Paul. Jeez.
So the Challengers fake their own deaths. The Challenger haters are hatching a diabolical plot. And part of their diabolical plot involves reactivating Multi-Woman, who is an interesting character at the very least, and quite possibly Multi-Man's blow-up doll. Right?
Now, she is a robot, is she?
Yeah, she is.
Right.
But he sits on her shoulder whenever she goes into battle, which, you know, I've got to get back into the Challengers a little bit more. I got a feeling there's going to be some really entertaining reads in this bunch.
Yeah.
Anyway, so their plot, the Challenger hitter's plot, is to, well, to take control of the seas. And in doing so, they create a tunnel that sucks ships down in. And they've taken 10,000 tons of copper, expensive laboratory equipment, processed uranium. And the Challengers follow the trail, find the Challenger haters underwater. Again, we get a nice scrum, one that leads to Rocky swimming away from Cray. I think it's Rocky. Yeah, Rocky swimming away from Cray. and winds up tying Kray in a knot just by swimming past him. Big That's robot clever. Tying himself in a knot.
Right.
So, yeah. And Volcano Man winds up taking himself out with his own bubbles. Yes, bubbles.
Right.
And somehow this underwater fight scene goes on for three pages. Aquaman's nowhere to be found. What? What a loser. You hear that, Rob Kelly? No Aquaman. Yeah. So Volcano Man takes himself out. Multi-Man is, as they put it here, is Multi-Man making like Aquaman, except I don't recall Aquaman ever being able to change into an octopus.
No.
Multi-Man changes into an octopus from an octopus to a jellyfish, he says. Looks more like a stingray to me. Stings the challengers with a sting that's going to slowly kill them over hours. Enough time for them to go to the surface, get in their plane, fly to Challenger's Mountain, and call the Doom Patrol for help.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. And that's part two. I'm sorry I didn't stop us at the end of part one. But then, turn of the page, we get to the Battle of the Female Titans. And, oh yeah. At this point, the Doom Patrol are brought back into their actual crossover, 17 pages into this story.
Oh, and, that was nice.
Yeah, it was very nice of them. Yeah. So Calder comes up with an idea to fight the Challenger haters, and basically it involves Robot Man pretending to not be Robot Man, who then goes on to take out Kray, and he fights Multi-Man, who ingests him as a giant sea anemone. And Robot Man punches out of Multi-Man's head.
Wow.
Yeah. So Multi-Man goes for his killing blow and turns into the jellyfish-looking stingray, or stingray-looking jellyfish again, except he's no match for Robot Man and a judo chop, which chops off the stinger. Kind of a bummer of a day, if you ask me.
That's yeah. sad. The judo chop has really gone out of fashion in fiction over the years.
It needs to come back. And if Jeff Parker's listening, because he listens, right, guys? Maybe he can work a judo chop in JLU. Well, he's still got, of course, I imagine all those are in the press already, but do something, Parker.
Yeah.
Bring back judo chop. So Multi-Man tries the jellyfish. Rocky and Cliff accomplish the first requirement of any comic book crossover, and they fight. Well, they almost fight. They have a shout and match, including poking each other in the chest, because, you know, that's smart when you're dealing with a robot. But Chief has defrosted the Challengers, so they wind up tracking the Challenger haters. Well, they blow up the Challenger haters' headquarters, and you get the Challenger haters at the bottom of page 20, all taking a moment of silence, hand over their hearts, weeping for their HQ almost. And as Kray puts it, that's the way the pizza crumbles. One more time. One more Bob Haney check. Still not Bob Haney. So it goes back to Challengers and Doom Patrol scrapping against the Challenger haters. Doesn't take quite as long as the earlier fights in this issue have. Robot Man goes straight after Volcano Man. Kray is taken on by Negative Man, and it looks like Ace and Rocky. And then Rita goes after Multi-Woman. And that's the cat fight that we were all waiting for, including hair pulling.
Oh, really?
Yes. Not only that, but they even admit to the hair pulling.
Wow.
Multi-Man, commanding Multi-Woman, says, "That's so fair of you, rubber band baby, and I love fair people because I'm such a dirty fighter myself." And right away goes for the hair. But
smack talk.
Yeah. But no silly Multi-Woman robot's going to be a match for Rita, who manages to tie her up, yes, in a knot.
Wow.
Yeah, Bob Brown likes putting people in knots, it looks like. During all the kerfluffle, Multi-Man sneaks away, points a gun at Chief, makes a demand of the Doom Patrol and Challengers to once again release his colleagues, and thus ends the issue.
Wow.
This was one crazy issue.
I have to have it now.
Oh, you do.
It's only reprinted in the archives, Mike.
I'll have it somehow. Because you're right, Doug, it sounds completely insane what went on just then.
It is crazy. And lucky for June, she's nowhere to be found.
Oh, yeah, because she doesn't appear in this story at all.
No, no. She went, this is too nuts for me. I'm out, guys.
So, Doug, seeing that you would have read far more of the challenges than I know I have, I can't speak for Paul. How does this issue rate compared to, I don't know, your standard Challenger story?
And I'll be honest with you, I haven't read too many standard Challenger stories, but the ones that I have read, this one is over the top crazy. The chemozooids, I think, are what really makes this one. And honestly, after this, I'm going back into my my Showcase Presents, and I'm reading some more Challengers, because this is just, this is Silver Age comics at its very best.
Mm.
And by very best, I mean batshit crazy.
Yeah, it's a little bit out there, just a bit.
And the best part about it is the archives, you know, it's got the recoloring, but it's all flat color.
Mm-hmm.
So it just looks even crazier, because you've got purples and oranges and yellows just all over the place. The Challengers are wearing their yellow uniforms, the red shoulder pads.
Okay, yep.
And when they turn blue from having their blood flow constricted by the chemozooids, the blue is just this, it's blue. I mean, it just transmits cold. It's amazing.
Gosh.
Yeah, if you guys can manage to chase it down in the archive, it's volume 3 of the Doom Patrol archives.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just going to make a note of that. Yeah. Update my Christmas wish list. Send it off to the wife. Post
there you go.
Wow. Okay, shall we push on with the final part of this crossover?
Let's do it.
I don't think how... I see no way how this is going to top it.
Yeah, having... Yeah, I those rabbits.
But we'll see.
God, well, we don't have cryptozoids in this one, unfortunately. So, yes, Doom Patrol 102 opens up with a title page for part one, 8 Against Eternity, and it shows Multi-Man as a gigantic whale, and he's about to devour both the patrol and the challengers. And you kind of think, okay.
Hmm, that's not normal.
But his mustache is intact.
Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness. So we cut back to the present, and we see the chief wondering where the patrol is. He's received message from the challengers that they're going to be at the patrol headquarters within the hour. We see Cliff is busy entertaining kids at a hospital charity carnival, and he's lifting a kid in an iron lung above his head, as you do, because apparently that's entertaining to children. Meanwhile, Rita, she's busy just trying to have a swim at Mento's mansion. I forgot Mento was in this story until I started reading it.
Surprise for you, Mike.
Yeah, pleasant, yes. Mento being Mento, you know, he uses his mind beams to freeze her midair as she dives off the diving board, and he says, I'll let you go if you marry me. Her response is to embiggen her hand and slap him in the face.
At which point, I just started clapping.
Yeah. Take that, Mento. It's at this point, Robot Man turns up because, you know, the chief has contacted him, and he grabs Rita and says, come on, chief's calling, we're needed. We cut away then to see Larry is out for a joyride in a jet plane. I don't know where he gets his plane from. He's flying past a rocket launch that doesn't go smoothly. The rocket's about to crash. So, of course, what does he do? He collapses his body in the jet. He's put it on autopilot, though, so that's okay. Negman flies off. He's trying to stop this rocket from crashing. He's not strong enough to do it, so he finds a nearby thunderstorm, absorbs the energy from the lightning, and uses that to safely detonate the rocket.
Comic science, yeah!
Yeah. Again, I don't quite know why they decided to introduce the team with those scenes, but anyway, the patrol then make it back to their headquarters, and the challengers are there in the patrol headquarters. And of course, as you said, Doug, what do teams do when they meet up for the first, you know, early in their career? They fight and they argue with each other. Robot Man and Rocky get into a fight over Multi-Man escaping in the previous issue we just discussed. So you kind of like, that's friendly. Prof Haley and the Chief are trying to determine Multiman's plans, and the Chief is convinced that Multiman is after an army of zombies at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. Of course he is. Because he's got this gigantic electronic brain which compresses all recorded human knowledge. It's a compendium of every major library, museum, and lab, current to within 48 hours of all events. And somehow from that, they've figured out that, Multiman's built a city under the sea in the Pacific Ocean. Of course he has.
As you do.
Yeah. So we open then over the page on part two, which is titled The Zombies of Atlantis. And we're cutting away to an undersea temple where Atlanteans have been preserved in a vacuum for centuries due to a volcanic eruption, which sealed the temple in and cut off all the air. So somehow that preserved the Atlantean people.
Sounds scientifically sound to me.
I'll agree with part of that statement. So we see Multiman and Kra and Multiwoman. They've decided that they're going to start experimenting on these preserved Atlanteans to try and revive them.
Always a good idea.
No, what could possibly go wrong? So before long, the King of Atlantis is revived, and he's
That's
not
Namor,
sure what.
Right?
Sorry.
That's Namor, right?
Let's call him Namor. He's got dark hair. The Namor of DC, we'll call him. So he's recognized Multiman's, you know, brilliance and leadership skills because he's revived him, and Multiman said, I can revive the rest of your people, but you must do something for me. You must team up with me. So next thing we see, Atlanteans on horseback coming up out of the water, and apparently they're near Indonesia somehow. Because we see a boat captain a few miles offshore, and he sees these warriors riding horses up out of the water onto dry land.
These must be seahorses.
They must be, Paul. They must be. Wow. Well played, sir. Well played. So I think that's getting close to the craziness of your issue, Doug. Not quite.
It is. It's getting there.
The reason I say that it's happening in Indonesia, because the captain says that he's looking forward to, you know, getting off his boat and having a taste of that good Indonesian food. So, of course. So, not too long after that, these warriors, they're raising villages and they're destroying plantations. The army gets brought in, but these Atlantean warriors, they might look weak and pitiful on their horses, but they have ray guns, which are melting tanks, because Atlantic technology does that. So I think this story is getting crazier and crazier. So we cut back to seeing the patrol and the challengers. They're racing towards the Pacific Ocean in a super fast craft that's been designed by the Chief. They get to where they think the Multiman's undersea city will be, and it's not too long that they find it, and Multiman attacks. First of all, he's appeared as a giant manta ray, and he's swatting Cliff all over the place. Then he turns into a giant lobster, and he's trying to crush Robot Man. So Negman comes in to save the day, and he's spinning round and round the water around this giant Multiman lobster, and he's making the water boil. So they're trying to boil a lobster. And Cliff says, all we need now is a slice of lemon and some tartar sauce. So as Negman fends off Multiman, he then changes again into some sort of giant eel creature, which one of the challengers calls a tape measure herring. Now, I looked up what a tape measure herring is. What do you think I found?
Nothing.
Correct. So I question the science behind calling this creature a tape measure herring. I'll call it a giant evil eel. Let's call it that. So the giant evil eel starts coiling around members of the challengers and begins crushing them. Rita goes into giant mode. She grabs a nearby giant clam and she clamps it down on the neck of Multiman. But he escapes. How do you think he escapes? He turns into a school of sardines. Of course. There's a small school of these fish, and they make the shape somehow of Multi-Man's face as they swim away. It's a really weird graphic element right there.
Yes, it is.
So as he does that, he mentions that while this has been going on, his army of Atlanteans have been attacking the capital, Japorta, and the heroes realize that they've been duped. What are we thinking of this craziness so far, gents?
You didn't do any Heaney checks.
Look, I gave up.
Well, it's good to see an aquatic adventure for the Doom Patrol. They don't do that too often.
This is true. I can recall one cover with Rita in giant mode fighting a giant octopus.
Yeah, right. Remember that one?
Very early in their adventures, but that was pretty much it, yeah.
And I like their submarine thing. It's very Thunderbirds-y.
Yes.
Yes.
And it can go 600 miles an hour. Woohoo.
Sweet.
So we get to part three, which is called The King Who Could Not Die. And it opens with the team up that you never saw coming, that you probably never wanted, but it's Mento meeting up with Beast Boy. And Mento is saying, come on, kid.
Where's Scott Fisher?
Oh, jeez.
That would complete it.
Oh, to complete something. But yes, Beast Boy's trying to have a snack. He sneaks into the locked refrigerator, because Goltry's a jerk. He finds a small hole in the doorway, turns into a worm, and then he's sitting inside the fridge eating in normal Beast Boy mode. Of course, he decides to stop doing that when there's a knock at the door and it's Mento standing there saying, come on, kid, the chief has ordered me to get you, and us both go off and help the team out. And Beast Boy's really excited by this because we all know how much he wants to be part of the team.
He doesn't want to hang with Mento.
Me. And Rita. So Gar and Mento, they get into another bizarre-looking craft. It looks like a UFO. I don't know where this comes from. I don't know whether it's part of Mento's collection or whether it's something that Chief has built. So they head off to the Pacific Ocean to track down the rest of the heroes. As Gar and Mento are heading towards the undersea city, the patrol and the challengers are on land. They're racing towards the Atlantean army. Unfortunately, Negman gets literally blasted apart by their fancy ray guns. But Red, from the challengers, he manages to knock the Atlantean king off his horse with an explosive capsule that he had hidden away in a miniature lab kit that the professor had disguised as a cigarette case. So
clever. Yeah, clever.
Very clever.
Well thought out.
The Atlantean king, as he's sort of coming to, he confesses that Multi-Man is holding his queen captive, and Multi-Man forced him to lead the attack on Japorta. So everyone races back to the undersea city, and they're taking on the Challenger haters. So Mento's, you know, he faces off against Volcano Man, and he stopped him with his mental beams. Cliff takes out one of Kra's legs. That's an awesome fight between the two robot dudes right there. Funnily enough, Rita and Multi-Woman have another giant lady fight, but there's no hair pulling this time. It's more like Rita just says, nah, I'm not doing this again. I'm just going to tackle you to the ground. I don't know how easy it is to tackle anyone underwater, though. Even if you're a giant lady. So, as the ladies are fighting, this is when we see Multi-Man take off away from a fight, and he changes himself into the massive whale we saw earlier, and he's heading towards all the heroes, because he's going to eat them, of course.
With a whale with a face on its nose.
Yeah, and the mustache, of course. And as he's racing towards them, we see Beast Boy has turned himself into a turtle, and it appears that Beast Boy runs away from the fight, because Cliff says, that chicken-hearted brat, he just disappeared. I never figured him for a coward. Now we face Moby Fink alone.
Cliff is always so understanding and, you know, expecting the best from Beast Boy at all
Cliff
times.
Cliff hates Beast Boy. I don't quite get why.
Don't know why. They're friends later.
Yeah. But then something magical happens. And Multi-Man the Whale sees that something is happening on his tail and all this stuff starts growing on him. And it turns out that Beast Boy has turned himself into a swarm of barnacles. And he's covering the entirety of the Multi-Man whale body. So we are left with this whale that's weighed down and kind of slumped over a giant rock outcropped and covered in barnacles. And he surrenders. Because he can't move. And whether they like it or not, Beast Boy actually saved the day, which is hilarious. So with Multi-Man the Whale knocked out, the team decides, look, let's get the king back to Atlantis so he can be with his queen. And while it wasn't actually shown, apparently the giant undersea city, which was covering Atlantis, took on a lot of damage during all this fight. So the giant dome that Multi-Man built, it starts cracking under all the pressure. And next thing you know, the dome crashes in. Atlantis is destroyed by the sudden influx of the pressure and the water. And the teams figure out that back on dry land, all the Atlantean warriors just crumble to dust.
Ah, happy ending.
Happy ending. So happy that when they're all back at Doom Patrol headquarters, what do? They fight with each other over which team did the better job.
And Mento.
Oh, yeah. Don't talk to me about Mento. So, yeah. And then Niles is busy asking Beast Boy, do you still want to join this happy group? And Gar says, not on your life, Big Daddy. I'm going to spend a weekend at a war where I can get some rest.
Wah, 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 wah.
So, yeah, pretty crazy story all round.
Yeah.
See, wow. I know very little of... I know enough about the Challengers, but seeing the Challenger haters in action, that was all sort of new to me, which is why I want to track down issue 48 of the Challengers to see a bit more of them in action, especially after the way you described them, Doug.
It's... Well, I'll throw a couple photos up.
Awesome.
As soon as I can get to the scanner here.
Awesome. But overall, gents, what do we think of this insane storyline?
Well, I mean, I think this is the first time I've ever read a story with the Challenger haters, and seeing the scope of their powers and their different, you know, they're pretty different team.
Yeah.
And, I mean, my view of Multi-Man was sort of like a sad man, sad old man in most of the appearances I've read him. I mean, that's everything from the, you know, mid-80s onwards. So in this, he's like, he's full on, he's like a opposite to Beast Boy, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he is. Yeah. With a mustache, mustache.
And pointy ears.
Yes.
For no reason.
Big head.
Very big head, yeah.
Yeah.
Fun stuff. Yeah, I'm missing the connective tissue that takes us from here, and I don't know if the off the top of my head if the Challengers and Doom Patrol team up again, you know, early in the morning here and all that. But I'm wondering where we go from Robot Man and Rocky being so adversarial to Rocky kind of being the chaplain of the Doom Patrol in the Giffen Clark era.
That's true. I've got no idea how they got there, unless. Because that sort of arrangement came out of 52. So whether there was something that happened in there that we've forgotten collectively, or...
No, it just sort of appeared in Giffen's run.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. There's got to be something somewhere that changes Rocky's tune, and I'm going to have to start digging into that.
Yeah, because I sort of didn't really put all the pieces together about who Rocky was in... the Giffen Clark run until much later, and I was wondering, okay, well, when and why and how did he leave the Challengers? So yeah.
I always took it to be that Giffen just wanted to keep some connection between the two teams, and this was a, you know, good supporting cast way of doing it. You know, sort of the, you know, filling the Father Kramer role in the Suicide Squad with Rocky for the Doom Patrol.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay. But yeah, I think this is, as far as I understand, pretty much the one and only team-up that the two teams really have. So, yeah. We'll have to do some more digging, guys. See what we can find out.
Yeah.
Homework.
Yeah. Love homework. But yeah, this was a fun, very silly, very of its time superhero team-up. And I think you're right, Doug. I think this is one of, if not the first proper crossovers from DC that we've ever seen. Yeah.
And what a way to start, right?
Yeah.
But they still sort of managed to give the readers, you know, complete adventures in their own chapters, you know, so they don't feel like they're, you know, getting half of something like you would these days.
Yeah.
Or an eighth of something in some cases.
And the fact that the Challengers issue came out the same day as Doom Patrol, and it had the Doom Patrol very prominent on their cover, that was... That must have been something. I mean, sure comic shops weren't as prolific back then, and the odds of actually seeing the two books on the rack at the same time was probably slim to none, but just the thought of it.
Yeah.
It would have been awesome. Covers used to sell the comics.
Yeah.
Mm. Awesome. All right, I think we've doomsplained the hell out of those. This week on the Mailbag of Doom, we're getting the answers to the question in comics-related information, what brings you the most happiness right now? And no one said underpants. I'm very disappointed about that.
God.
Anyway, we heard from Moby1, who's at Shmoby1, not Shmoby Dick, and he said, the Flash on TV, two mates doing a great job at WFD Pod, and I better include a book, Sign of the Times, really, Justice League, maybe? So, thanks, Moby, that you like the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
We heard from Ange at DrAnge70 on Twitter, and he said, of course, never one answer. Impending Supergirl show and all the buzz about the character, great comic podcast, and sharing comics with his kids, Batgirl, Squirrel Girl, and My Little Pony.
Yeah, the hardcore comics for the kiddies.
I guess that puts me with Articulate Brown Man. Is it Karthi Kakarella?
Yes.
Yep. All right. He's saying, Marvel-wise, it's that India's Spider-Man will be regularly appearing in a book. And also says, DC-wise, I'd probably say Cassandra Cain showing up.
Oh, yeah.
We have from Mike Lapine, who's at Lapine Is Me, and he said, being able to work at a local comic shop one day a week so I can have money to pay for comics. That is living the dream, I'm going to say.
That is.
It is.
We should all be that lucky.
Mm. We heard from Shane/Boston Brand.
At DC World Dead Man.
That's it. He said, comics related, a Justice League Dark movie.
Ooh, that's a bit of a wild card, that one. I'm not sure what else that'll be like.
Mm.
Susan Cotton says, the Bronze Age Marvel that I read in its Epic collections and on Marvel Unlimited. Which, guys, do you have access to Marvel Unlimited? Or is that a...
No, we have access to it over here. We just
all right.
Might not.
Just don't have access to time.
Yeah, it is a big time time hole.
Mm. It's a great idea, stuff, but yeah, it's great you can access the stuff on there, but yeah, it's we're too busy living the dream with Doom Patrol podcast.
We heard from Astrakis1, who this time is known as Hacker Time Went Vile. So the Enneagram machine working overtime for that.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say comics? No. Oh, okay. Yeah, you can. I haven't felt so excited about comics in general in 35 plus years of buying them. So much great stuff out there, except for the fact there is no Doom Patrol book. That is true.
There is that.
Yeah.
We heard from Karthi Kakarella again, and he said, the sheer increasing amount of quality content from independent creators has me overjoyed. Now I just need to read it more. So, yeah, another person feeling the time crunch there. Yeah.
Jay
at W. Bandoy, chipping away at my didn't read it pile. Nothing like picking up a book, finishing it, and then wanting the next issue ASAP.
Oh, the old didn't read it pile.
Yep.
Yeah. We heard from at Fractures, who's Ninjak Frack at the moment, and he said, the fact that I can finally get Ostrander's Suicide Squad for my bookshelf, even if it's not in hardcover. Damn you, DC. I love the Suicide Squad. Very excited about the finally collecting the majority of that run.
Mm-hmm.
Should be in hardcover, though. I agree.
Maybe they'll do an omnibus one day.
That'd be awesome.
Then Fractures went on to say, the fact that I will be getting the Master of Kung Fu in omnibus hardcovers from Marvel. So that sounds good. He also said, the fact that I can listen to two buddies talk about the Doom Patrol and make me love the Patrol even more.
Thanks, Frack.
What are we talking about? And he said that Mike is reading Brave Ogle Batman right now, which is why he hasn't referenced Mento at this point.
Yes.
But mainly the amazing people I've met here on the Twitters and the amazing comics he reads on a weekly basis. So many things he's thankful for.
He is. Yeah. Very appreciative. Yes, and thanks, Frack, for not mentioning Mento for a month.
Yeah.
An added bonus for me reading Brave Frogle Batman. We also heard from Greg A. at Garoujo1. He said, finding unexpected gems in the discount bin. Oh, I love that. Love it when that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I found a dollar copy of the Mike Allred issue of Solo.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Yeah, with the Doom Patrol story in there.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And Martin Gray, at Martin Gray, says, what makes me happy comics-wise? Buying old comics on eBay, like this gem from my childhood. And he posts a little picture there that I can't quite make out.
It's an action comic.
But it looks like Superman's flying away carrying his head.
Yeah.
Again?
And meanwhile, Clark Kent's down on the ground going, hang on, I'm Superman.
We heard from Rift, who's at Rift1821, and he said, all the TV shows. It really is a great time for comic fans. And I'm also going back and watching all the cartoons like 92 Batman. Classic. Mm. Good stuff. There is a lot of comic book TV shows these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
It's great.
Doug, what's your answer to this question?
The answer I tweeted out was the action figure covers, the variant covers from John Tyler Christopher. Mm-hmm. Marvel's been doing a lot of those lately, and it's like getting action figures, but not losing any shelf space. And the figures themselves, or the covers themselves, just look brilliant.
Yeah.
And you know, things like this Doom Patrol podcast and being able to come on here and talk Doom Patrol with you guys, or Ryan Daly's Secret Origins podcast is another one that's comic.
That is
joy
such a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Enjoyed your appearances on there, Doug.
Thanks.
Are you doing any others?
There might be one, or maybe two.
Ooh.
But they're a ways away.
Okay.
Mike, what about you?
I will say, for me, it's meeting the people that are into comics. Like, getting to meet meet over the airwaves and chat with Doug about the challenges and the Doom Patrol. Just chatting with people on Twitter, doing things like, you know, meeting people that I've chatted to on Twitter for ages in person at places like HeroesCon and even Oz Comic Con, where we met Robert Rambles and Walker there.
Yeah. Paul.
That was really cool. So, yeah, I think just getting more involved with the comics community and meeting some excellent, awesome people there. I mean, there's going to be one or two bad apples in every crowd, but, you know, 99.9% of the time, just meeting some awesome, great people who just want to, you know, chill out and read comics and talk about how awesome comics are. That's it for me. Just making friends through the shared love of comics.
Oh.
Yeah.
Group hug, everyone.
Group virtual hug.
Yes. Yes.
I can echo that a bit because I live in a country town. I probably know two people in real life who read comics that I see every now and again. Twitter and the internet and all that, and podcasts has, you know, it's given me a lot of friends in comics. And another thing that's made me incredibly happy is there's a guy on Twitter called Will Fish, and he contacted me and said, would I like a drawing? And I said, yeah. And he did a drawing of Monsieur Mallet and the Brain for me.
Yes.
Which he's sending to me. And that was just gorgeous. And I'm so excited to receive that. And it's, I mean, I wish I could draw. And I love that people can and they can do it. And, you know, that he's willing to share something like that with me for nothing is fantastic.
Mm. That's what I mean. Awesome. The awesome sort of people that you do meet. Will Fish is a perfect example of that. The top bloke. And if you get along really well with him, you might be lucky enough to score a drawing from him. So, yeah.
Are you plugging for one there, Mike?
I've actually already got one from Will. I'll post it up later. I posted it in the past. It's actually of the Doom Patrol, but they're Smurfs. So Smurfette is Rita. There's another Smurf in bandages. There's a Smurf. There's Papa Smurf in the wheelchair, and there's a tin-plated Smurf as well with little bolts in his head. It's awesome.
Awesome. That is awesome.
I will post it up again later. So yeah, right. That's very cool.
Yes. Fantastic. Well, I guess that's it for the show. You can find the Twitter show account at WFD Pod on Twitter. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, I believe. Never seen it myself. I hear it exists. We're on Tumblr. Yeah?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, good, good. That's how we roll these days.
It's about as active as the Facebook page, but we're there.
Sweet. Yeah, but, you know, surprise us. Leave a message there and we'll stumble across it one day. Now, what are we going to do next week? I think we should talk about Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issue Number 9. I won't spoil who's in it. Gargwax. And next question of the week, for those who want to play early, is what is the best comic cover logo design?
Another tough one. Jeez.
So, Doug, where can people find you if they want to find you?
Out on the Twitter, I'm at dzavisha, Z-A-W-I-S-Z-A. I do reviews for comicbookresources.com. And I also have a neglected Doom Patrol blog, My Greatest Adventure, 80.blogspot.com. And I've got another blog that's just kind of random other comic-y stuff that's equally neglected, Tales of My Greatest... Well, it's been getting a little stale right now. It needs a little freshening up. It's Tales of My Greatest greatest strange adventures.blogspot.com, which is real easy for me to say.
Well, to help you spread the word, we will put links up to that on the Waiting for Doom Twitter page and Facebook page and in the episode listing as well. So we can share the love for all the good comic stuff.
And thank you for plugging us on your other podcast appearances recently. So.
Yes.
Guys, this podcast truly is a joy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate that.
Yeah. We love coming into contact with people who are just as passionate about the Doom Patrol as us, and they've been doing it longer than us. So we salute you, Doug.
Yes.
Well, thanks. Yes, but you guys have certainly been consistent about it.
Well, you know, we can't quit the Doom Patrol. They're just so awesome.
Oh, we can't. They're like a good drug, right? A good, crazy, hallucinogenic drug.
Yes.
Hey, kids, say no to drugs, but say yes to ducks.
And say yes to the Doom Patrol.
That's right. That's right. Okay, let's wrap it up there. Thanks again so much for joining us, Doug.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We will catch you again next time on Waiting for Doom.
Woohoo!
Okay, it all sounds good, so I've just gone ahead and started recording. So, all good. I'll just make sure I've got everything. Okay. I've got notes. I've got that.
Yeah, I'd like to say notes. You guys are really prepared on all this. This is pretty amazing.
Look, it's a professional show we put here. Professional until I speak.